baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So we are thrilled to be joined once again by today's guest, Blue Jays reporter for Sports Illustrated, Mitch Bannon. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Fun as always.
So when the Jays blow a lead like last night, does that become more work on your end? I'm guessing anything you wrote when they were up just goes right in the garbage.
Luckily, I wasn't on a game story last night, so I could kind of sit back and view it from a little more of a casual perspective. I would not want to have been doing a game story last night. Would have been, oh, the Vlad game, the big home run.
Right.
Quickly pivoting to something else. But yeah, I'm glad I wasn't writing a game story last night.
So let's just get into last night's game then, because I know Blue Jays Twitter did not handle this late game collapse very well. A lot of talk about bringing in Adam Simber instead of Anthony Bass, and why Schneider would bring in a ground ball pitcher instead of Bass with a high K rate and extra innings with a runner on second. Some Jays fans have even gone as far as being like, he should be fired for this, calling him Charlie too. You know, very, you know, level-headed responses to this late-inning loss. Was this a bad decision on his part, or could there be more to it? And maybe Anthony Bass, who hasn't pitched since, when was it, Adam? The 16th?
16th of September.
Could Bass be injured?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything on Bass, but I certainly think that that could play into it. I think if there was a knock worth noting, Schneider would have said so after the game. He's usually pretty transparent with those kind of things, especially if it was like something like, yeah, he was like the Blue Jays before every game, they get like a sheet that says relievers are green, good to go regardless, yellow if you need them, orange if you really need them, or red. I reckon it probably just came down to Simber was green, Bass was yellow or orange, and then like you probably felt pretty good, like they match up similarly against the same kind of guys, both have the slider. The fastballs are obviously vastly different velocities, but you're probably using them in pretty similar spots. So you figure when you're trying to get to a next inning at that point that maybe you're going to have to use Bass anyways. So you use Simber there and see what you can get.
Simber has been fairly solid, and he's one of the most used relievers in all of baseball. The guy's got a rubber arm. Did you, when you watched him come out of the pen, have a problem with it? Because I didn't really have a problem with it. I mean, I was a little confused. I was expecting them to go to Bass, but it's not like I was pulling my hair out. How did you feel personally?
Yeah, I think it's like I probably would have gone to Bass there, but, and I know a lot of people would have, but we don't have all the information. So like, yeah. I think Simber strikeout rates and like the whiff rates and the swing and miss numbers would be a lot closer to Bass's than people think. Like he's got close to a strikeout per inning. I think it's like high sevens, maybe low eights on his strikeouts per nine. So he's been able to get big strikeouts for the team this year. Also really good at getting like those easy infield flies with which turn out to be kind of the same thing. And so I wasn't terribly hated. I don't think, oh, they brought in Adam Simber, they're going to lose the game because of this move. But like, if all else was equal, I definitely would have gone to Bass.
I mean, this Philly series was kind of weird anyways, right? I mean, 29 runs in the first game, and then they didn't score a run until the eighth either team in the next game. Is this a series to even read anything into, or just take it as a blip and kind of move on with the way you're looking at the season?
Yeah, I think like if they lose to the Yankees in the AL East by a game, people are going to look back at that game, but there's probably eight games all season where you can look back and be like, oh, this is one that got away. I think if the Yankees had lost last night, if the Mariners had won, like it might seem like a bigger loss than it actually was. But I think you're probably pretty happy to get in and out of Philly facing the two starters that you did with a split.
I mean, fans are going to do that anyways, because people still bring up Marcus Semien's error against the Tigers there that technically, according to people, blew the entire season, right? So you can always pinpoint certain moments and blame it if you want. If that's the type of fandom, you know, the emotional damage you want to do to yourself, go ahead, I guess. But let's talk the bullpen a little bit here, Mitch. Because the bullpen's been really good after the trade deadline up until just recently, where we've seen a little bit of a scuffle. We've watched Romano kind of blow a couple saves. Garcia has given up hits and runs in spots that he probably normally wouldn't give up. Is this a concern? I know that it's been a heavily used bullpen in September. Could this be fatigue?
Yeah, I think it's possibly fatigue. Like, this last week has probably been the worst week of Jimmy Garcia's entire season. And like, I think 3 runs last night. And then he had a couple like non-save situation or non-big moments where he gave up runs earlier during the homestand last week. So that'd be something to keep an eye on. Like, he's at a pretty significant workload, but the Jays are also in a spot and they have a deep enough bullpen right now with the expanded rosters where they can maybe ease off the gas a little bit on these guys. I know like Romano feels and a bunch of guys in the pen feel like if they don't pitch like for 3 days that they're losing it. They need to be in the games just to keep everything in check, keep the shape of their slider and stuff like that. So I wouldn't expect a guy like Jordan Romano or Jimmy Garcia to get a week off, but maybe you use them once out of every 3 games. Maybe you don't use them on back-to-backs for the next couple of weeks. Unless you do get close to the Yankees, I think those 3 wildcard spots are all pretty similar in value, unless you're like jockeying for a home field advantage right at the end there. So they're in a spot where they can be cautious about the bullpen usage and kind of the usage of every single player on the roster right now.
I know Vladdy hit his 30th home run last night. I know it's not been an MVP caliber season for him like it was last year, but how do you evaluate Vlad's 2022? Because when I look at it, I'm kind of like, if this is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s down years, how can you not take this and just love it, right?
Yeah, I think the equation in my mind is like, okay, is this a down year or is this like the median outcome? Is this the 50 percentile? Is this what the average season from here on out is going to look like? And we're not going to know that for like 3 or 4 more years. So it's hard to kind of evaluate what this season was without finding out what Vladdy truly is. If this is a down year, like, great. You sign up for 35 home runs, a bunch of RBIs, stay healthy the entire year. You sign up for that every single day. If this is the median outcome, still an all-star player, still really good, still one of the best first basemen, best pure hitters in the American League, I think you probably take that too. But obviously, it's not like the perennial MVP candidate upside that he showed last year.
Is the ground ball rate on Vladdy concerning? Or do you think he'll figure it out in the offseason?
I think he'll figure it out for sure, because it's something he's been aware of for the last like 3 years. He's gone in and out of these slumps where he's just been a ground ball machine, and every single time until this last few weeks, he's gotten out of it. So it's not like they've just figured him out and he's just going to hit ground balls for the rest of his career. I think it's something the Blue Jays hitting coaches are hyper aware of. They were hyper aware of it when he wasn't hitting ground balls early in the year, talking about this is what he's doing well. This is why the ground balls aren't happening right now. So it is kind of the swing decisions and the ground balls that come when Vladdy isn't forcing pitchers up into the zone is kind of the key for him. And everyone's known that for the past few years. So I bet it'll be a big focus, not in the offseason, in the next like 3 days, the next 5 days. They're constantly kind of trying to get him to make the right decisions on those swings at the bottom of the zone.
It's always mind-blowing, his exit velo, because even when he's hitting ground balls, he's hitting it at like 115 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he can hit a bunch of ground balls and still be a very good baseball player, just not a 48 home run guy.
So you look at the schedule, we are down to the final 4 series of the season, all of them against division rivals. But the Jays do look like they are kind of poised, to secure a wild card spot in the next 3 to 6 games, most likely. Do you think who pitches and in what order will be affected by who they line up against? Or is that more or less irrelevant and this organization's going to go with the same 3 pitchers for the 3 games in the wild card, no matter who they're playing?
Sorry, I missed just the beginning of that question. Do you mind repeating it?
Yeah, so just basically my question to you is, when the Jays land a wild card spot, wherever it is, the team that they're playing in that wild card, does that affect how they set up their pitching?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Like, I don't think so, just because I don't think, like, obviously we can simplify this down to Berríos versus Stripling, because that's kind of really what you're asking, I think, yes. is that calculus. And I don't think they're different enough pitchers to, like, unlock anything different against specific lineups. Like, and I don't think you're going off, like, 5-game start sample sizes against the Rays to determine Berríos versus Stripling. I think you just choose the guy you think gives you the best chance to win against that opponent, regardless of the opponent. Because I think it's not like you're choosing Kikuchi versus Stripling, who have two very different skill sets. Like,
yes.
Ross has got the curveball. Jose's got the slurve. They both have changeups that have been big for them this year. Their fastballs are not too dissimilar. Jose's got the two-seamer, but they are kind of very similar pitchers. Not like the exact same guy, but similar enough that it's not going to, like, change anything in the calculus. I think you're choosing the guy that you think is more in form right now.
Do you personally have a preference as to who they're throwing out there?
I think I might be not alone in this, but a rare Jose Berríos supporter. Like, you okay. need first things first. Okay. I guess there's at least two of us, but first things first, you're going to need 4 starters if you're going to go deep in the playoffs anyways. Like, whoever's not starting game 3, if there's a game 3, is starting game 1 of the DS. So both of those guys are going to play big roles for this team in the playoffs. I just think if you get to game 3 and you need, like, some upside, if you've lost a game and won a game, probably you've used some good bullpen guys, probably guys are tired. You want the guy who's can give you 7-8 innings. Like, you want to take the highest high upside, and Ross Stripling's been really good, and his upside mm-hmm. continues to get higher and higher and higher. But I think when Jose's on, and he's been on kind of recently, he's had some of these flashy starts, he can be borderline untouchable. He can be 12, 13 strikeouts. And so I think you ride with your guy, because if you're going to win the World Series, you're going to need Berríos to be good. So you might as well hope he's good in game 3.
So speaking of Ross Stripling, do the Jays give him a qualifying offer?
Yeah, that's the real question, isn't it? I think it's the Ross Stripling questions in October and November. Yeah. They're going to be all the storylines. I think today, probably not, but like it was a hard no for me 6 weeks ago, and now it's a probably yeah. not, and like 2 more good Ross Stripling starts and maybe it's a yes. Like, he's
yeah,
I think the issue is he probably takes it, and so then that's a lot of money dedicated into one guy. Like, I think this is kind of, but also there's the argument to be made, this is probably Ross Stripling's chance to really cash in on free agency. Yes. He's coming off a really good season. So maybe he does what Steven Matz does and goes out and tries to get like the $40 million over 4 years, just sign his big contract. And then whatever happens after that happens. But it's honestly really close. Cause it's just like, do you think you're going to get, like, this is how the team views it. Do you think you're going to get $20 million worth of value from Ross Stripling next year? Probably not. But yeah. like, it's close. And then, like, if you think he's going to reject the qualifying offer, it's easy. You offer it to him, because then you just get the free draft pick. But I think he's close enough to accepting it that you really have to think about if it's worth it.
The Stripling market is so interesting with what he's just done, because if you look at his, you know, like, especially at age 32, I'm always such a guy of, like, look at the back of the baseball card, and that's most likely who the guy really is at that point in his career, right? But Ross Stripling has made so many strides when it comes to being a starter, and the pitch mixes that he's using, and the fact he's added that changeup and has been so successful with it. Forget about the Blue Jays. Mitch, do you think it's possible that he gets a J-Hap 3-year, $36 million deal, a Steven Matz 4 years, $45 million deal? Are these the type of deals Stripling has kind of played himself into?
Yeah, I think those are the perfect comps. Like, Hap, Kikuchi's market last year, mm-hmm. Matz. Like, I think he's right in. Teams to like you just need one or two, and they mm-hmm. can drive your market up, and you can, like, you don't need everyone in the league to have interest in you. You just need 2 teams to believe that this changeup and him being a full-time starter has taken him to the next level, and that he's in good shape. And so I think he's a pretty smart guy. He understands the business of baseball. He'll know, and his agency will know what his market is going to be like. And I think it's going to be pretty high. There's going to be a couple teams who see him as a maybe a third, fourth starter more than the fifth, sixth swingman he's been kind of his entire career.
I mean, it's no Aaron Judge contract year, but it's a fantastic contract year. I mean,
relatively, it's like about the same like percentile better than your standard.
Right, exactly. And I mean, if you looked at the 2021 offseason and were to predict where Ross Stripling would be, you would think right where he was in 2021, right? Like probably $3 to $6 million, 1 year contract, swing guy, some start, some bullpen. And now he literally has played himself into term, into double digits per season average. I can't think of another pitcher who has done what he has done at the age of 32 to the extent that he has done that.
Yeah, I think like
you think of a comparable scenario. Like,
I know Jose Quintana is probably going to get paid this offseason, but that was more of like we knew he had that upside. Like he's had it before in his career and it's kind of re-reaching those heights. That's kind of a comparable, like really resurgent season. But yeah, it is interesting. Like you look at all the guys he was kind of comped to, like the Brad Peacocks of the world. Those guys, after you get out of your arb, like a lot of those guys aren't signing a next contract. They're getting like spring training invites and their careers fizzle out. And he's peaked, found a new level at the perfect time for him and the Blue Jays.
Sorry, can I jump in and ask a quick question about the Ross Stripling conundrum there? Because as a fan base and as a team, there's some real value to his flexibility, being a guy that can give you six innings, can also pitch on like 1 or 2 days rest, can go in the bullpen, you know, as needed, right? That's real value, but it doesn't necessarily translate into like contract dollars, right? Like there's also real value in Whit Merrifield stealing 30 bases. He's never going to get a mega deal contract for being a base runner, or like a Kevin Biggio with his positional utility, right? Like utility and flexibility is sure nice to have, but I don't think it necessarily translates into dollars. So with Ross Stripling, do you think that the free agent market for Ross Stripling is going to look at him as a 32-year-old who's really never pitched more than 120 innings in his career until this year, as a guy who's just taken the next step and is like now a legitimate starter? Or do they see him more of like a probably still a gadget guy who played really well?
Yeah, I think it probably depends on what teams think about this changeup. Like that has kind of unlocked his ability to see a third time through the order. So if your team's internal evaluations like the changeup, you're probably more willing to buy the Ross Stripling full-time 150, 60 inning starter guy. But also like I said, you only need like one or two teams to believe it. Like you don't need the entire industry to believe it. You just need one or two teams to be like, hey, you're not just a swing guy. We're going to pay you like a true starter. And I also think the number he's played himself into salary wise, no team is signing a swingman at like 10, 11, 12, $13 million a year. So whatever team he signs with, whether that be the Blue Jays on the qualifying offer, Blue Jays an extension or another team, they're penciling him into the rotation full time just because you can't really afford to pay a swingman that kind of money.
And starting pitchers are in demand. I mean, look at the Steven Matz deal. Look at the Kikuchi deal, right? Like these were deals with term, but there was still a roll of the dice to it, despite the fact that they locked these guys up for 3-4 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like there's a lot of teams who could use even 130 innings of Ross Stripling. You don't think you'd look good in a Texas Rangers uniform, a team that desperately needs reliable starting pitching? He's from Texas.
Or the Angels.
He trains in Texas. Yeah, the Angels too. Exactly. The Angels, I think, tried to trade for Ross Stripling like 3 years ago in that Jock Peterson deal that never happened. But
So
there's going to be a market of teams that need pitching a lot more than the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays also are going to need pitching this offseason.
Well, that's a great question too, because if Ross does leave, how do you see the Blue Jays replacing that hole? Like he would for sure leave a hole in this rotation. Do you think they go out and sign another big Gausman deal, or is it more of a budget and patchwork at the back end of the rotation kind of a thing?
If Stripling leaves, I think you got to go get, whether that be trade or free agency, two starting pitchers. I think you can come into spring training giving Yusei Kikuchi the opportunity to win a job, but you can't be coming into spring training with him penciled in your rotation. That's, as we've kind of seen, can be a recipe for disaster. So I think if he leaves, like, you would love to bring Ross Stripling back. And even if you do, I think you got to go out and get another starting pitcher, especially with kind of the question marks that Barrios has had this year. I think making a trade for a guy who is a little cheaper dollar wise makes a lot of sense, just because you've already invested so much money into this rotation. And Alek Manoah's contract's only going to get more and more expensive as he goes through ARB. So I could see maybe you sign a fifth starter, you trade for a third, another 3-4 starter. I think that would make a lot of sense. And then Kikuchi is your kind of insurance and the ability to win a job.
I kind of want three more Mitch Whites. You know, like, one of the Achilles heels of this team all year has been the lack of depth at AAA when it comes to starting pitching. And don't get me wrong, because you look at the organizational depth of pitching, and there is a lot of high-end guys, but they're all in A-ball. They're all in AA. I mean, we just saw Sem Robers and Tiedemann get bumped up to AA, so they're a little bit closer to closing that gap. Both, you know, fairly touted prospects. Obviously, Robers less than Tiedemann, but... can you see them filling in the depth a little bit more as well? Or do you think that they trust that these guys coming up are going to do that naturally?
Yeah, I think you go into the season with kind of Kikuchi and Mitch White as that depth. I think if you get two more guys, you start with those two. And then, like, unless your entire rotation falls apart, which baseball's a weird thing, it can happen in those first couple of weeks. You expect, like, Robers, Tiedemann, Zulueta is going to start in AAA. Younger, there's, like, they have kind of some guys who've come up. They're all not going to hit. That's just how prospects work. But if one or two of those guys is in AAA performing, has 10-15 starts, and then someone goes down, Barrios goes on the IL, you're maybe more comfortable with that kind of depth. I think the pitching depth is going to be in a much better spot next year than it was this year, than it has been in the past few years, just because, like, Tiedemann and Robers alone, if they get to AAA, are more upside pitching talent you've had in the upper minors than you've had in the last, like, 5 years. So I think they're going to be in decent shape as long as those injuries don't happen, like, a week into the season.
So let's look real quick at the playoffs. I'm curious what you think. Do you think it matters who the Jays play in the wild card? I know Adam and I have talked about this quite a bit, and we both kind of lean towards the side of, if you can't beat whoever it is you're playing in the wild card, good luck against the Astros. Are you kind of in the same camp?
Yeah, I think that is a good way to look at it. Like, you're going to have to beat better teams than the Rays and the Mariners to win the World Series. But I also think they're, like, good teams. They're teams that, kind of like the Blue Jays, are in a much better position with this best 2 out of 3 than they would be for a one game wild card. Like, the especially the Mariners and Blue Jays are kind of built like a best 2 out of 3 team with 2-3 really good starting pitchers, and then kind of those big game players that they can get, like Julio Rodriguez versus Vlad in a wild card series. Oh my God, would be really fun to watch.
So cool.
I think the big thing for me is I don't want to be traveling to Seattle. And I think maybe that's a personal thing where I don't want to have to go across the country to Seattle on one day's notice. Like, that's maybe my bias sneaking in there, but, like, they finished game 162 in Baltimore. If Seattle's the one seed and they're the two, they're going across the country to Seattle, starting a series. Like, maybe you send, like, Manoah the day before to get him rested and not have to worry about that flight shenanigans. Right. But, like, that's a lot of stuff you're worrying about that a Seattle team playing at home would not have to worry about. So, and, like, Tampa, they make that trip all the time. We know what the trop is, but I think you would probably rather be going to Tampa or hosting either of those teams than having to make the trip across the continent.
I could be crazy. I know I've talked to friends who are big Jays fans and mentioned this too, and they're like, you're insane. But I would rather Tampa. I would rather Tampa over the Mariners. I'd rather Tampa over Cleveland.
Interesting.
I don't fear Tampa's offense. Don't get me wrong, their pitching is great, but so is Cleveland's, so is Seattle's. I don't think that when it comes to starting depth anyways, we line up any better against any one of the others. When you look at those, like, do you lean one way or the other? I know we just talked about how it doesn't really matter, but Is there a team you'd prefer to play?
I think Cleveland.
Cleveland? Okay, that's fair.
But also you're going to Cleveland if you play Cleveland, yes. Which is, I think, like, they're all kind of close enough in talent that I'm just playing for home field. I think that's the only kind of differentiator you can have at this point, is like whether I'm playing at home, or if I'm going to Seattle, going to Cleveland, going to Tampa. I do think Tampa's interesting because, like, there's a chance they're throwing, like, bullpen day, Ryan Yarbrough, Drew Rasmussen. There's also a chance they're going, like, McClanahan, Glasnow, Rasmussen. Like, mm-hmm. they're in their Baz, even two could come back. Like, their pitching is very up in the air right now. Kind of guys maybe not coming back from injury. There's a little too unknown there for me to be cheering for a matchup against the Rays, because, like, if they get Glasnow back for, like, three innings in one of those games,
yeah.
McClanahan gets healthy again, if Baz comes back, they can be dangerous.
See, now,
dangerous without him. Go ahead, Adam.
For me, this might be a little bit of, like, putting the cart before the horse, but, like, I have my eyes on the Astros, and for me, I would just rather play the Astros in a 5-game series than a 7-game series. So if we can play them in the ALDS instead of wait until the ALCS, for me, that seems like the advantage. So,
yeah, like, you're then, like, let's say you start Stripling in game three, you got Berríos in game one of that 5-game series. Then you got two games of Justin Verlander versus Jose Berríos. And I don't care how good Berríos is, matching up twice against Verlander when you kind of only get one start from Gausman and Manoah in that series. Like, that's
a good way of putting it.
You're going to have to win the other three games probably. So it's tough. I think the Astros are so good and their pitching is so deep that
their pitching is,
it's going to be difficult no matter how you match up with them. But
do you think we have a better chance than in a 7-game series? Instead of going against Verlander twice?
Because, like, the variables are lower and, like, you get one lucky win in a 5-game series and it makes it easier than one lucky win in a 7. But I do think it's more that I think they would probably match up better against the Yankees in a 5-game series than the Astros in a 5-game series.
Okay. So Adam and I, Mitch, have talked about this all season. I'm sure you've written about it and talked about it yourself. We've gone back and forth on the catching situation and how it looks next year or even a couple years down the road. And all season, I kind of felt like Kirk was most likely the odd man out for the reason of the DH situation and the construction of this roster and how many guys need that DH day currently playing on the Blue Jays. Obviously, this could all change, and there's a lot of moving parts to this question. But now I almost lean towards keeping Kirk after watching the season that he has put together and how we talked about just earlier, right, when we were talking pitching. You even brought it up. You don't know what prospects are going to hit or not, and it's not that I doubt Gabriel Moreno, but to just bet that he's for sure going to do what Kirk is going to did, right? Like, to just think that he can step in and kind of take over that role is asking a lot of a rookie, no matter how high the ceiling on him as a prospect is. Do you think Kirk can catch in a more full-time role next season? And do you think that they may be leaning towards keeping Kirk this year? Or do you think, I know there's even talk that Moreno doesn't even need to necessarily catch and they keep all three?
Yeah, I think coming into the season, my unreported just opinion was that Jansen was probably the odd man out. I know the Blue Jays really like Jansen. They see him as, like, the intangibles guy on this team, like something that the numbers just don't truly encapsulate. They like his game calling, even though I think I'm and some other people are a little lower on it, but they really like how he manages the pitching staff. But I think I've, as opposed to maybe switching from keeping Jansen to keeping Kirk to trading Moreno, I've now in the last few weeks been under the impression that there's a chance they come back with all three of these guys. And I don't know if that means all three start in the 26-man roster. Maybe Moreno starts back in AAA, but I think we've seen Moreno try out some funky positions in practice. There was always that third base experiment. I think there's a chance that they just like what each of those three guys bring, because they bring something very, very different. That
very different.
You run it back for one more year. You maybe punt on the punt on the catching equation one more year. You have Kirk and Jansen as kind of your 50-50 duo. You bring Moreno up when you think he's ready, and you just kind of make it work. We've seen them run a really deep bench for the last few weeks now, and it's, I think, really given John Schneider a weapon to work with. And I think his bench usage has been some of his best managing. So if you can figure out how to do that with giving Moreno some experience in the outfield, giving him a little infield experience too, and just kind of being a super utility guy back there, it could work for a year. Probably not a long-term fix. One of these guys is definitely going to go eventually. It's just how it's going to work. But I'm less convinced it's going to happen this offseason.
So let's shift gears a little bit here from the Blue Jays. Albert Pujols currently sitting at 698 home runs for his career. Aaron Judge sitting at 60 for the season. Both two bombs away from truly monumental and in Judge's case, record-breaking stuff, which is pretty darn cool for baseball fans this season. This is not the sort of thing you get to see every year.
No, yeah, and it's like we had the two-way player last year. We got these home run chases this year. It does feel like we've been in a bit of like a baseball history renaissance the last three years. Like you hear people talk about the steroid era and you talk about the Maguire-Sosa chase and how like pivotal those are for like modern baseball history. I don't know if we're going to view this year quite like that going forward, but maybe there'll be an ESPN 30 for 30 made about this season. Like I think there are just enough interesting storylines that it's been cool to kind of be a follower of baseball overall, not just the Blue Jays this season for sure.
More so than, and I love that you brought up the last 3 years because I agree with you 100%. It's funny how much intrigue has been injected into the games by some of these individual performances that have just been off the chart, right?
I think it helps that these are happening on the Yankees and Cardinals too, like two of the most historic, two of the most followed fan bases. Like, I don't know. I can't say either way, but I don't know if this, the Judge home run record, like everyone's really in on this American League record. I don't know if it's Eugenio Suarez and the Mariners hitting 60 homers. Is it as followed? Mm-hmm. Who knows? But Walker, Aaron Judge, Yankees, I think it helps it being such a big deal.
For sure. So the playoff race this year has been awesome. And I know that I was one of those old man losers at the beginning of the season that was just like, why are we expanding the playoffs? And I got to walk that back now because this has been a lot of fun. And I think it goes without say that MLB kind of hit this one out of the park. Is this a success in your mind, the expanded playoffs?
I like it because of the playoff format, maybe more than I do the expansion. Like I like this best 2-3 series. I think it's really good for the game. I think it's just makes like those wild cards. I think we're going to look back in 30 years and be like, what were you doing? Having teams play one game to determine their entire seasons. Like it was kind of gimmicky. I think we're going to look at it that way, but I think like maybe you take out those third spots, especially in the American League. This is still a really interesting race. I might argue it's more interesting if there's only two wild card spots, because then it's the Jays, Mariners, and Rays fighting for two spots, and one of those teams is going to be out. So I do like it for baseball. I like it for kind of more fan bases are going to get in on the playoff fun, which I think is good and good for the long-term health of the league. But I do think there was something unique about playing 162 games, and you can win 91 games and you can be on the outside. I think that was as heartbreaking as that can be. I might miss that.
It did make playoffs special for baseball, I thought.
Yeah, like if you made it to the playoffs, that's an accomplishment in itself. And I think a lot of GMs, a lot of organizations, they view it as our goal is to build a team that can make the playoffs, and then whatever happens, happens. And obviously, if you make the playoffs and lose a few years, you got to elevate your standards. But the baseball playoffs were truly an accomplishment to make it. And they're still definitely an accomplishment. You're playing a lot of games. Not many teams make the playoffs, but slightly less so this year.
So let's look at next year. No shift, pitch clock, bigger bases. How do you think these rules are going to affect the game when you just kind of take a quick look at it? Can we expect more offense? Do you think this is going to work? How will teams adjust, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think the no shift is going to have a lot less of an impact than people might think, or at least maybe not the most noticeable impact in the world. After that rule came out, I was watching a couple of the games on the homestand yesterday. And whenever the Jays would shift, I was trying to think, okay, what will they do next year? And it was a lot of like, Bobichet is standing here, and then next year he's standing like 4 feet to his right, and the set pitch happens. He's just gonna move over. Oh, did I cut out there for a second? But yeah, I think, like, I don't know if the shift is gonna impact it too much. The big one for me, and maybe this is once again my personal bias sneaking in here, is I think the pitch clock's gonna be big. I think it's just gonna really tighten up games. There's not gonna be the unknown of whether or not today is going to be the 4-hour game. Like those just aren't going to happen anymore. You're not going to have Johnny Cueto on the mound facing off against some other starter who's going to take forever to pitch. I think at the end of the season, we're going to look back and be like, hey, the pitch clock was really, really good. It's going to make people more kind of willing to go to baseball games, and younger audience, new audience. But in terms of the rule changes, the one I'm most interested to see are kind of the base running rule changes, the bigger bases and like the disengagements with the mound. Like that's good. Those first couple times that a pitcher steps off twice, and then if he's going, he has to step off the third time, like the guy gets second base. It's going to be so interesting to see teams' calculuses on, are you just running every single time then? Like, what do you do then? Like that's the thing I'm most looking forward to see, because I like stolen bases. I think they're some of the most exciting things in baseball. So if we get teams just running wild, I think that'll be super fun.
For sure, the Rays will exploit it, right?
Oh, yeah.
They'll be taking a big lead, trying to get that free base. Just pick me off twice, I dare you, right?
They're going to roster 3 sprinters next year.
Yeah.
So, Mitch, I do have a couple more things to ask you, and then we'll go to the YouTube chat and see what the folks have to say at home. I'm curious your thought on the playoff roster. Is this team going to carry 6 outfielders into the playoffs? Like, are we going to see JBJ, Zimmer, and Tapia all on this bench? And to further to that question, any word on Lourdes?
Yeah, it sounds like, so he's going to join them in Tampa. I think, like, if this was like game 162 and it means something, he would be back after the minimum. Like, he's been kind of battling these lower body issues, these cramps and these hamstring things all year, and he's had a really solid year, especially at the plate. But I think this is we have just so many outfielders on our roster right now. Go on the IL, get right, come back for the playoffs, Lourdes. I think he'll come back, probably, whether or not it be right after or right for this series or next series, travel back with the team. I think he'll be back soon. This was just a great opportunity to get him off his feet and try to deal with these things and kind of have them done with before the meaningful games. In terms of the playoff roster, I would expect all those guys are on the roster, because, like,
yeah,
it's going to come down to, are you rostering your 8th reliever, like your long reliever who's not going to pitch in meaningful innings? Or are you going to roster a guy who can steal you a base, a guy who can snag a ball in the 9th inning defensively? And I think
you say Kikuchi pitching, not on our playoff roster, right?
I think there's a chance he is, just because, like, you need one guy. Like, if you're losing a game 100-0, you just need a guy you can throw in there. And right. So you have room for
the gas can and burn it down.
But you don't have, like, I don't think Mitch White's going to be on the playoff roster. I don't think, like, no offense to Foster Griffin, we haven't seen much from him, but like a guy like that's probably not going to be on the playoff roster. So you don't need to carry just a ton of relievers to log innings.
You just probably need don't go dudes. With 3 catchers either, eh?
Yeah, I doubt Moreno is on the roster, but that's I think honestly that's more interesting than the outfielders, because like there's a case to be made where like if you're, but I like, because Kirk's probably like your first game, if it's like Gosman pitching, you're probably catching Jansen and DHing Kirk. Like that's probably the best team you can make, and then so then you're going into a playoff game with no catcher on your bench, and I think that's an interesting equation. I'm not sure what they'll do there, but yeah, I expect them to load up a big bench for John Schneider to use and just kind of roster the dudes that are going to pitch meaningful innings out of the pen.
Mitch, thank you so much for your generosity with your time. We always love having you on here, man. It's always fun chatting ball with you. Adam, take it away, bud, and let's see what the folks at home have to say.
All right. First one, just about, you listed all the outfielders we have and the abundance going on there. Teoscar, is he gone next year?
I think if there's a regular dude from the lineup traded this offseason, Teoscar just makes a lot of sense. Like he's going into a walk year. He is, like, from an at the plate perspective, maybe a little redundant in this lineup. He's got big power. He's also, like, corner outfielders are arguably the most replaceable guys. Like we talk about how many outfielders they have on the roster right now. So
it's going to be the easiest place for us to get a left-handed bat too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of, you can talk yourself into, okay, if we trade Teoscar for pitching, we can backfill with a left-handed that. We've now made ourselves more versatile in the lineup, and we've addressed a hole. I think it's just he's the easiest guy to talk yourself into making like kind of a we trade from the MLB team, but get better move.
Do you think the way this roster is constructed will be changed this offseason? Or do you think we are going to see some major changes? Or do you think this team, I guess it depends on how the playoffs go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they're probably less so now than maybe like 3 months ago. I think they probably felt like they were going to have to make big moves, but like they're going to win 93, 94 games. Everything people thought this team was going to be, despite the ups and downs, is probably what it's going to end up being. So yeah. I think you probably don't need to, but like Gurriel and Hernandez are both going to have 1 year left on their deals this offseason. So if that's not, you can't really justify taking both those guys to free agency and having one kind of regular outfielder on your roster. So I think it's maybe not about the 2023 roster that moves will be made this offseason as much as how do we keep this sustained contender? And does that mean trading a corner outfielder? And I think the answer is probably yes.
Has Schneider justified returning next year?
Barring 14 games left, barring like an 0-14 and a miss the playoffs. I think, yeah, I think he's been able to kind of navigate these ups and downs really well from just a pure game management perspective. I really like what he's done. Obviously a lot more is going into that than just John Schneider pulling the strings, but everything I've talked to with players, they rave about him. They like him. They're willing to play for him. And I think like he's kind of been their guy, like whether or not that was going to be in a long-term manager role or a long-term bench coach role, they like him leading this clubhouse in one way or another. And if you don't promote him to manager, you're probably not going to bump him back down to bench coach. I don't think a guy like that would take that move. You might have to fire him if you're not promoting him or extending him to a long-term extension. So I would expect he's back as the manager next year.
So knock on wood, and hopefully this is not a scenario we're looking at, but if the Jays get swept in the wild card, is John Schneider still on the hot seat?
No, I don't think so. Like, I don't think this organization, but like, unless he makes like huge gaffes in the two games and the team, like, we get a bunch of anonymous quotes and George Springer is at the mic saying like, we hated those decisions after the game. Like, he would truly have to lose the clubhouse to warrant that, because I don't think this front office group makes decisions like that. I don't think they think, hey, was winning these two games enough? It's how do we feel about our overall product? How do we feel about the direction of the team? Did we think that what he was doing made our team better? If the answers to that are yes, then I think he'll be back regardless of the outcome of two games in the wild card.
All right. Two from the live chat that I want to get to before we let you go. Again, thank you so much for the generosity with your time. But Charles K says, I think we will sign Vladdy regardless, but at what point does the front office consider trading Bichette if he decides to treat signing an extension with the same value of being on the open market?
Yeah, I don't know if you're trading Bo Bichette. Like, I think unless he tells you he is not going to sign with you, I don't think it's worth it until that last year, especially if you're in a competitive window. Like, sure, if things go south, if George Springer gets real old real quick, if this rotation ages out, and when 2 years before Bo hits free agency, he's like the only good player on the roster, him and Vlad, then maybe you think about trading those guys, entering a rebuild, building your rebuild around the prospects you get for them. But if you're trying to win a World Series, I think you ride the Vlad and Bo arbs out. Just go right until the end, see what happens, try to extend them. Obviously, you try to extend them before that happens, but if you're trying to win a World Series, Bo Bichette helps you do that. So I think if he's right there trying to hit the market and you're still winning 93 games, you ride it out, try to win a World Series with him.
You push it right to free agency. You let them test free agency and hope you can compete.
Like, if you're like, let's say a projected 94 win team the year before he hits free agency, you trading Bo is like almost giving up on that season. Like, you then become a borderline playoff team, probably not going to win the World Series. So, and then what, you're rebuilding and trying to get back to that 94 win team. I think you might as well take advantage of that one shot, that one last shot. Hopefully for their sake, hopefully they've succeeded before that happens. But if that's their final shot, I think it would make sense to take it over trying to do a quick rebuild.
You're probably not wrong. You're probably not wrong in that assessment that trading Bo equates to writing the season off. And I think that's an interesting way of, you know, recalibrating the quality of player that Bo Bichette is, because it is really easy to get down on him and the errors and when he's not hitting right. But yeah, getting rid of him would be tantamount to starting over, essentially.
For yeah. Year. Unless, like, you can do, like, unless Carlos Correa is in free agency or the next Carlos Correa, and you can trade Bo, get those prospects, and sign someone with money. Right. Like, it would have to be a very unique circumstance for that not to be basically giving up.
Very good.
Like getting Shohei Ohtani type of stuff.
Sure.
Sure.
All right. Next one then comes in from Simon in the chat. Says, does Mitch think we'll see Ricky Tiedemann next year?
Yeah, I think last time I was on here, we were talking about this. It is interesting because he's been shut down for the year. He got, like, not because of an injury, just because he works so much this year and it's really his first season. But he's going to start next year. Like, he's going to have an invite to big league spring training. I'll tell you that right now. Like, he's going to be pitching. He's going to be the story of spring training, like Moreno was this year. And he's going to be it's going to be a when, not an if. Like, at minimum, he's starting in Double A. If he succeeds, he can easily work his way up to AAA. And then we're looking like at a guy who, as I said earlier, if someone goes down, like, why would you call up the depth guy if Ricky Tiedemann's pitching well in AAA? Like, you would take the upside with that. And I think, like, he's taken everything they've thrown at him and he's succeeded. There's no expectation that that's going to stop next year. So if he, like, you look at what they did with Alek Manoah. They gave him that invite to big league spring training. He carved up those Yankees teams, and then he was in the big leagues like 6 weeks later. I don't know if the same thing's going to happen with Tiedemann, just because they probably won't have the same, like, drastic need for a starter like they had when they called up Manoah. But yeah, I would be poor performance or injury are the only things that I think will prevent Ricky Tiedemann from getting to the big leagues next year, not some, like, timeline that the Blue Jays have on him.
It's so wild to look at their pitching prospects and see age 20 next to Ricky Tiedemann and Sam Robers. Like, these are young guys.
Yeah. Like let's say Tiedemann cracks in next year. He plays out his seven years and, like, everything goes right. He's like the Alek Manoah style from the left hand. He's just carving guys up in the Cy Young conversation. He's going to hit free agency as, like, a 27-year-old. And, like, that's when, like, you're making generational money if everything's going right for you there.
Very nice. Okay, just very quickly before we let you go then, Aaron Judge contract next year. Do the Yankees keep him? How much does he get? Does it start with a 2, a 3, a 4? What are we talking about?
I think it starts with a 3, I would guess. I think it's probably, like, 8 or 9 years, $300 million would be my guess. Could be higher. I think, in my heart of hearts, I know he's probably going back to the Yankees, but the team I've been eyeing this entire time is the Giants. I think he's a Bay Area guy. They could really use that injection of a huge bat. Their payroll is, like, very, very small right now, and they're a team that can spend big. I think if he goes to free agency and there's two teams bidding for him at the end, it'll be the Giants and the Yankees.
He could take down Maris this year, and he could take down Barry Bonds next year.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. What a storyline.
All right. Scott, anything else you want to get to here?
No, that's everything. Wrap it up. This was great, Mitch. Always love having you on, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Cheese and crackers, shows to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.